1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons in Washington. About 90% of the United States has been ordered to stay at home for at least a few weeks, maybe even a few months. Health officials say it's the safest place for us. But that's not true for people experiencing domestic violence. An average of 24 Americans per minute are victims of rape, physical violence, or stalking by an intimate partner, according to the National Domestic Violence Hotline. That's more than 12 million women and men over the course of a year. And with many states ordering people to isolate themselves at home, we're already seeing an uptick in 911 calls for domestic violence. But now that we're all being told to stay home, many of us are seeing more of our neighbors than we ever have before. What should you do if you suspect someone is being hurt? To help us with this, we have Crystal Justice. She's the Chief Marketing Officer for the National Domestic Violence Hotline, and she's with us from Austin, Texas. Crystal, welcome.
Good morning, Sasha. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much. When we talk, Crystal, about domestic violence, tell us what exactly we're talking about here.
Sure. So domestic violence or intimate partner violence is defined as a pattern of abusive behaviors by one partner to maintain power and control over another partner, specifically in an intimate relationship. And we really say it is about the power and control, and that an abuser will use any tools necessary to maintain that power and control. And COVID-19 is certainly one of those tools.
So aside from the physical abuse that I think most of us are familiar with or aware of, what other types of abuse can there be?
Absolutely. So emotional abuse is certainly nearly universal in those experiencing physical abuse. Also financial abuse, restricting one's access to any kind of funds in order to maintain any kind of independence. And then digital abuse is something that certainly has appeared in the last decade and has become more prevalent in the last few years, particularly among teens. Mm-hmm. And this is using all the devices that we value each and every day in our life, but using them in a way to control the individual's actions, to track where they are, to track who they're talking to, et cetera.
So that's digital abuse.
Correct.
And financial?
Financial is restricting one's access to funds. And so we know that if someone, you know, a part of being independent, even if it's in a relationship, is to have access to the things that you need. And all of us need money. And so financial abuse looks like someone immediately taking the funds from someone's paycheck and then doling out a very small amount, if anything at all, to that individual, making them have to ask for permission to buy things, everyday things like deodorant and with COVID-19, antibacterial soap, hand sanitizer. Mm. This is really taking away all financial resources from an individual's control.
So much to get into. You know, police departments in cities like Seattle and San Antonio reporting an increase in domestic violence calls. We'll get into those numbers after we take a pause. We are talking about what we can do for people who are stuck in an unsafe home during the coronavirus pandemic with the National Domestic Violence Hotline's Crystal Justice. Still to come, we'll also add two more voices to the conversation and hear from some of you. Next, I'm Sasha Ann Simons. You're listening to 1A. From WAMU and NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who specialize in issues such as isolation, depression, stress, anxiety, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment when you need professional help. Get help at your own time and your own pace. Schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. Visit betterhelp.com/1A to learn more and get 10% off your first month.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
Right now, every household in the country is being asked to fill out the U.S. Census. It's the form that helps us determine how voting districts are redrawn, where to build public schools and hospitals, how to spend federal money. So why are some people afraid to fill it out? We're getting into all that this week on NPR's Code Switch podcast.
This is 1A. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We're talking about how to help domestic violence survivors amid stay-at-home orders in place to curb the coronavirus pandemic. We got this voicemail from Carly, who has a message for all of you.
I wanted to encourage those people who might not be experiencing domestic violence to really listen. When I reached out, I got a lot of, it's not that bad, you know, oh, I know what you mean. It's horrible at my house, too. And I want you to really listen when somebody reaches out to you and says, I'm not okay at home. It's not because of the quarantine. It's not because they're tired of seeing their family. They're tired of being with that person. It's more than that. And please, I beg you to listen when somebody says they need help. It's not always a joke. And it's okay to ask. It's okay to say, are you unsafe at home? It's better to ask and feel silly than to brush it off as a joke.
Thank you for sharing your story with us, Carly. Joining us now from Houston, Texas is Maisha Coulter. She's the CEO of AVDA, a domestic violence survivors advocacy organization. Maisha, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
And from Massachusetts, we have Bob Weil. He's a retired detective from the Amesbury Police Department and now trains law enforcement on how to respond to domestic violence calls. Hi, Bob.
Hi, thank you for having me on your show, and hopefully we can help someone out.
Absolutely. We mentioned earlier, Crystal, police departments in cities like Seattle and San Antonio are reporting a 20% increase in domestic violence calls this March compared to last year, a trend that we're seeing play out around the country. Cherokee County, South Carolina, saw a 35% increase in calls compared to February, according to NPC News. Now, is the hotline receiving more calls as well, Crystal?
So, Sasha, at this time, we're not experiencing a significant increase or decrease in contact volume, but that doesn't surprise us. Mm-hmm. With survivors in such close proximity to their abusers, particularly those who are being forced to shelter in place, they may not feel safe to reach out for support. And unfortunately, because they're not reaching out for support, things may be escalating and they might find themselves in more emergent situations. So it makes sense that 911 calls are increasing while the typical proactive support calls have not yet. It is typically after a natural disaster like an earthquake or a hurricane or even the 2008 economic downturn. Once life begins to return to normal, people go back to school and work, we find that our contact volume increases significantly and for a sustained period of time.
Now, what resources are available for anyone in an unhealthy and potentially dangerous situation right now?
So that's been one of the challenges. A lot of the contacts that we are receiving, we're seeing that resources typically available to survivors are no longer being offered due to COVID-19 or have risk now due to COVID-19, specifically shelters. Some have closed, some are no longer accepting new intakes, but also survivors are having to weigh their own personal health when entering shelter and potentially increasing their risk of contracting COVID-19. We also are hearing that because of the pressure and just the sheer amount of demand that's being put on local law enforcement, that they may not be able to respond as quickly to calls on domestic violence as they would. And then certainly support groups and counseling have restricted services. So the most important thing that we are doing at the National Domestic Violence Hotline is specifically safety planning with survivors on what does it look like to keep yourself safer when you're sheltering in place, and a very detailed plan of what you can do throughout the day, what you can do when a situation is escalating to keep you and your family safer.
And please, if you don't feel safe or you know someone who needs help, call the Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. Or you can text LOVE IS to 22522. Now, Maisha, what are you seeing right now in Texas?
So we have seen an uptick in calls in the Harris County area, more like a 5% increase in the number of calls to law enforcement. We have also seen the situation that Sasha, that you heard described in regard to shelters having to make choices about who can come into their fold at this time. If they have a 75-bed space, they're limiting their capacity so that they can accommodate the idea of social distancing within the space that they have their constituents living, you know, at the shelter.
Right.
So they will probably reduce down to 45 beds as opposed to the 75 that they could normally accommodate. We also see at my particular organization, in some weeks, an uptick in the call volume. So I remember the week of March 16th, when things started to become more clear that we had to self-isolate and, you know, stay-at-home orders started to be mandated around the cities and states. I did see an uptick in calls, and maybe that was because people were trying to sort of help themselves before they got to the point where they were completely confined with their abuser.
Now, we got this email from a woman who preferred to stay anonymous. Here's today's producer reading that message to us.
The school closures and thoughts of how I would manage all day, every day at home with small children did not bother me. I froze, however, when my husband's workplace also shut down, meaning that he, too, would be in our midst 24/7. While the topic of strained relationships during this period of never-ending time with partners and kids seems ubiquitous, hunkering down with an abusive partner is an entirely different matter. My physical well-being and that of my children is not in danger. Yet this time of quarantine for me has seemed to concentrate the already heavy toll of emotional and psychological abuse, including highly manipulative behaviors, blame shifting, and incessant criticism that I have endured. The feeling of being utterly stuck and alone is so real, especially as the prospect of moving some services for abuse survivors, such as support and educational groups online, is not feasible when the offender is just down the hall and well within earshot.
Thank you for sharing your story with us. Now, Bob, I want to bring in Bob Weil. He's a retired police detective who trains law enforcement on responding to domestic violence calls. Bob, what are your biggest concerns with survivors being at home full time with their abusers right now?
Not being able to get away. Just not being able, like some, you know, your one was just read. They don't have that even 5-10 minutes a day that they could normally have to be able to just take a step back and breathe a little bit. The tension is actually a lot more. It's, you know, they're walking on eggshells now becomes like every minute of every day, unfortunately.
You mentioned that 5 or 10 minutes. You mean moments when their partner, you know, leaves for errands or for work or et cetera. That's not so much happening anymore with the pandemic.
No. So it's almost like you have no time to breathe.
Crystal, what are you hearing about how coronavirus specifically is playing out into domestic violence situations?
Sure. So we know any situation that adds stress, financial strain, can be very dangerous for survivors, particularly as their abuser might increase the frequency and severity of the abuse. Then you layer on isolation, which is one of the strongest tactics an abuser can use against their victim. And here we have a national, international situation where isolation is the norm. And so we're seeing survivors of domestic violence really feeling alone. And so I think what we have to consider is how we as friends, families, and neighbors can build a community around them so they know that they're not alone.
And the uptick in violence that we were talking about, that isn't only because people are stuck at home with each other, right? There's also the added stress of job loss or financial strain, too, right? On top of the general anxiety about this whole, the uncertainty of this pandemic, correct?
Right. So, again, back to power and control. When an abusive partner loses control of some aspects of their life, for example, being able to go to sporting events, being able to go to work, now they're going to look for even more power and control over their victim. They're going to seek it out in any way they can, especially when other elements where they have control in their life are being removed.
I want to bring in some listener voices. Tawana Harris emailed us. She told us about her domestic violence survivors organization called the Butterfly Society. That's in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. She says, "We want survivors to know that we're still here for you. We're still providing resources and services to talk to victims and survivors. We're providing temporary lodging, safety planning, rental assistance, and referrals. Together, we will get through this. You are not alone." Thanks for that message, Tawana. Bob, I'm thinking about people who don't yet realize that they're in an unhealthy relationship. You know, those stages of denial in the beginning where you think, you know, oh, he only shoves me. You know, he's only shaking me. He's only pushing me. They don't realize that they're actually being abused. What do you say to those folks?
It's all, I think, the worst type of abuse. I mean, it's all bad, but when you get the stuff that's just verbal in nature, that name-calling, belittling, people think of domestic abuse as you have to have black and blues in order for it to be an abusive relationship. You know, and I've always told my victims over the years, and even now when I still talk to people, it's just the second a hand is raised, that's abuse. The second you're told you can't do something, that's abuse. The second that, you know, you're not allowed to go out of your house, being made to do whatever you're to do, even if it's they're not putting a hand on you, it's all abuse. And a lot of people don't understand that, unfortunately, not just victims, but also people on the outside. Because
what do you mean by that?
What's that?
What do you mean a lot of people don't understand that?
Well, it's sad to say, but there a lot is if it's not happening inside the four walls of my home, I don't care. So why do I even need to worry about it?
Oh, okay, so turning a blind eye to it.
Yeah. And when victims keep going back, you know, and it's one of the biggest things we train police officers in, is you're going to see these victims go back, and they're going to keep going back. And you got to understand that one of the biggest reasons they keep going back is because the emotion of love is still there, thinking they can change them, and, you know, they just want what everyone else has because everyone has this idea that everything is picture perfect. So when you see that, you know, you've got to understand that it's not about you, it's about them, and it's about what you can do for them when you're even in there on a call for 5, 10, 15 minutes, as long as you're in there.
Maisha, we talked a moment ago about courts being closed. What can you add to that conversation from Texas?
From Texas, our courts are still open. They're certainly open in a different way than they previously existed. Our judges are hearing matters. They're doing it through Zoom and on the telephone. Probably about 2 weeks before we got to the point where they were doing the Zoom calls, they had started to try to do the social distancing within the courthouse itself, which required the judges to reduce the number of people in the courthouse. And you could literally, if you went to that 10 number, you could arrive at that number very quickly with a judge, a clerk, a bailiff, and then the parties on each side and their attorneys. You're almost at 10 at that in a very quick moment. And so what has happened is the courts have slowed down tremendously. When we're doing protective orders, those are usually emergency proceedings, and so we can do those within a very quick window of time. But because the courts have had to slow down in order to accommodate the way we do business, it has decreased the number of protective orders we can get as frequently as we can get them.
Yeah.
We have had judges extend the protective order window. So, for example, in normal times, you could have a protective order temporarily for 21 days.
Yeah.
Judges have had to extend those substantially just to account for the fact
that they won't
get...
Let's pause for just a moment, Maisha. More from our guests and from you in a moment.
Hey, Mindy here from the Wow in the World science podcast for kids and families. If you're looking for fun ways to educate and entertain your kids, we've got you covered 5 days a week. On Mondays, go on a scientific adventure with Wow in the World, and Tuesdays through Fridays, play along with our new game show, To What's in a Wow. It's Wow in the World from Tinkercast and NPR. Subscribe and listen now.
Now we ask for your help with today's conversation, and we heard from a few listeners who wanted to stay anonymous. Here's today's producer reading one of those messages.
Days before my job was put on hold due to COVID-19, my long-term, emotionally abusive relationship turned physically abusive. This resulted in my filing for a protection order from my now ex-boyfriend.
Having life turn upside down in that way was already a lot to deal with before the seriousness of the pandemic hit. There are no words to describe the level of relief I have realizing that I left just in time. I'm sure there's some kind of social distancing or glad I'm more than 6 feet away from him silver lining humor to the whole situation, but I haven't identified it yet. It's been strange isolating after such a significant life change, but despite the difficulty of it all, I've never been so grateful to be alone. The fear of him finding me, I've moved and my address was withheld in the court documents for my safety, is definitely still there lingering. So actually the statewide stay-at-home order has been an additional, somewhat reassuring comfort to me beyond its purpose of slowing the spread of COVID-19.
Thank you for sharing your story. We're talking with Crystal Justice from the National Domestic Violence Hotline. Maisha Coulter, she's the CEO of a domestic violence survivors advocacy organization in Texas. And Bob Weil, a retired detective who trains law enforcement on how to respond to domestic violence calls. Please, if you don't feel safe or you know someone who needs help, call the Domestic Violence Hotline. The number is 800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. Now, Maisha, my apologies again. I wanted to just give you an opportunity to finish your thoughts earlier when we were discussing the courts.
Sure. I was just trying to say that the courts have had to slow down substantially in order to do the business that they conduct in a manner that would still be compliant with the need for social distancing required by COVID-19. And what has been also unique and different is that the courts have had to rely on the state, the Supreme Court, to make emergency orders about how we conduct our hearings. So, for example, there's a basic constitutional right that you have to, see your accuser in court. They've had to change that to abide by what is necessary at this time, which is to isolate. So the hearings are happening, but they're happening with Zoom or these platforms where we are not actually in each other's presence in order for the courts to be able to continue to do the work that they need to do.
Now, many of us are stuck at home now and seeing more of our neighbors than we ever have before. Looking at an email from Lauren, she says, as a neighbor overhearing intense fights, when should we call 911? What are the most effective ways to help someone in trouble? Crystal?
Yeah, so this is something we're hearing a lot about. And many people, as you said, now find themselves at home and may be observing concerning behaviors or even outright abuse in their neighborhoods. It's important to know what action is best to take. Certainly, if you think someone is in immediate danger, their life is being threatened, you should call 911. There's no question about that. However, if you just are suspecting abuse, you're overhearing an argument, you're observing behaviors that are concerning, but you aren't quite sure, the National Domestic Violence Hotline is here to help you also. So you can reach out to us via phone, chat, or text. Talk to us about what you're observing, and we can plan with you what might be the safest action for you to take on that person or that family's behalf. And sometimes it's counterintuitive. Sometimes we think calling the police is always safest, but sometimes we see that that can actually escalate a situation that may not have been as dangerous as it was before that call, because now the abuser feels as if they've been outed and they hold their victim responsible for that. So we're here to strategize to keep you safe and to keep those that you're observing in your neighborhoods safe also.
Now, a listener from Virginia sent us this. Bob, I'll want you to weigh in once I'm done. They said, my neighbor was assaulted by her partner a few nights ago. We share a wall and I could hear him beating her. I called the police, but he left before they came and she wouldn't answer the door. It's hard to describe how terrifying it is to hear that through the wall. I can't imagine how she feels being quarantined in that situation. You know, again, Crystal just brought up the hotline. Bob, tell us, what should people consider when deciding whether to call 911 versus the hotline?
If things are bad and it's out of control and you hear someone, like you just said, that was getting beaten, you need to call 911 at that point in time, because it's really the safest thing to do. The problem is if someone doesn't want to answer the door, they don't answer the door. Mm-hmm. And you got to walk away. It's a sick feeling. I've had it happen numerous times over the years. You can do one of two things. You can just keep knocking on the door or just not leave until they open the door? Do you have that much time? You know, if you're a neighbor and it's not at that point, maybe you can just kind of identify it. And if you can catch the person out by themselves, because you can only stay locked up in your house for so long, you need to go out and go for a walk. And if you're a victim and you can get away and you're a neighbor and you can see that, obviously you're not right in front of the house, but, you know, down around the corner, whatever, you know, just say, hey, listen, I heard something going on last night. Are you okay?
Yeah.
And then you can even make up a plan of action with them. You know, so if it was my neighbor over here and I know they were in a bad way, and, you know, I would say, okay, if things are getting bad, throw this light on in the house. At least then I know that I need to help you a little bit more. So just like little things, you know, even if you just identify it, keep a log. If you're a neighbor, just keep a log in your own house. And if you see things escalating, you can call the police, because even when the police do go into the house, they're trained now that to like respect and everything else and empathy. And if you're in there and you're not accusing people of doing anything, and if you do it in the right way, then you can leave there and hopefully nothing more is going to happen. It's just, you never know the unknown.
Very, very, very tricky and risky situation. It's important that we also talk about abused men. I got an email here from Anne. She says, please comment on abused men. Are there other additional resources specifically for men in abusive relationships? We're also getting a lot of comments and questions about same-sex relationships and domestic violence as well. Would you like to weigh in on that for us, Maisha?
Sure. So 1 in 7 men are also abused in their intimate relationships. And the services that we provide are directed toward anyone who needs them. Gender is not not a determinative of services. And I think that's across the board nowadays when it comes to domestic violence service providers. They are acutely aware that men are also abused and need the type of assistance and resources that anyone who is experiencing these types of relationships would rely on.
Kokomo Kid tweeted, this could be bad with people spending so much more time at home. To make it worse, my governor in Florida calls gun stores essential. Yikes. Bob, tell us, what does having guns in the house mean when it comes to domestic violence and domestic homicide?
It raises the level of dangerousness to as high as it can get. And I know I've read, you know, just because I do a lot of reading too, and, you know, a lot of books that I've read, you know, in where abusers who were convicted of killing their partner, they've said that if the gun wasn't in the house, I probably wouldn't have killed them.
Yeah.
Because, it's, you know, you pull the trigger and the bullet's out, there's nothing you can do to stop it in that heat of the moment. So if the gun's not there, it actually would, if it wasn't there, they said I probably wouldn't have killed him. They would still have hurt him in some fashion, but not have killed him.
We got this message from a survivor who wanted to remain anonymous.
I'm a domestic violence survivor. Many people like myself do not have home internet due to domestic violence or being low income or senior, disabled, and all the places that we would usually go for internet, like the public library cafes, are closed right now. It seems like a lot of people are not aware that there are many people that do not have home internet, and therefore we're having a really hard time now during this COVID-19 crisis trying to stay in touch with the world and just get things done.
Thanks for leaving us that message. Crystal, what do you say to that? Internet issues.
Absolutely. This is such a challenge. And what's difficult is that it depends on where you are in the country, particularly in rural areas. We find that this is a bigger barrier for those who are reaching out for support. We do our very best if someone's able to call us or text us, which doesn't require internet service, to help them connect with potential resources in their area to access internet service. As the caller identified, some of those are not available at this time, but there are some organizations that are out there to help assist, whether it be with financial assistance for things such as this, or just to get them the system that they need in order to access support. But it's definitely a challenge, particularly in rural areas.
Uh-huh. Crystal, I know the hotline is now running remotely, which is not an easy task, I'm sure. What else is changing with how you operate right now?
Sure. So yes, we are, all of our staff are now remote. We're a 24/7 organization. And so that has required quite the shift for us. In addition, our advocates, when you call the National Domestic Violence Hotline, it's a professionally trained advocate who will work with you. And our advocates are really needing specific plans for people who are experiencing COVID-19. Since March 16th, we have had more than 2,300 survivors contacting the hotline cite COVID-19 as a condition of their experience, either as part of their abuse and or a barrier to accessing support. Mm-hmm. So we are just having to keep on our toes as these situations are coming in, developing mitigation responses, enhancing our safety planning, because we really see ourselves on the front lines and supporting survivors all the time,
yeah.
But particularly those right now who are affected by COVID-19. So it's required a lot of additional training and resources within our organization.
Now, we've been primarily talking about intimate partner violence, but couples aren't the only ones stuck at home right now. So are children. Quickly, Bob, what can be done to help families with children who are stuck in abusive homes right now?
It's hard for kids because, you know, at least they can go to school and they can have, you know, some 6 hours of being away. I think the one thing you have to remember that if you're a neighbor and these people and there are kids in there, try to interact with the kids whenever you can get a shot. Just, you know, making small talk or whatever the case may be, just anything to give them some sort of normalcy, and just to see if they are in an abusive home, if they can just listen to what the kids say and then kind of read between the lines.
Just about 30 seconds left, Maisha. Final words, what do you want to say to survivors right now?
I want to say that they don't deserve to be in a situation where they don't feel safe. And right now, I keep hearing people saying, we're in this together, and we need to be protective of one another. That cannot be less true for people who are in their chosen relationships with their intimate partners. So we need to, as a collective, recognize that there are places that are not safe and support them as best we can. Look out for your neighbor, ask questions. Teachers who are still interacting with children, whether that be on, you know, social media or mm-hmm. platforms that they've designed for this time, still ask your kiddos whether or not they're okay in their home. What are some good things that have happened today at home? What are some bad things that have happened today at home? Just to continue to have that engagement and an opportunity for them to be able to speak out if you can make that happen.
Thank you. That was Maisha Coulter, the CEO of AVDA, a domestic violence survivors advocacy organization in Texas. Thanks again, Maisha.
Thank you.
Crystal Justice, Chief Marketing Officer with the National Domestic Violence Hotline. Thank you, Crystal.
Thank you.
And Bob Weil is a retired detective who trains law enforcement on how to respond to domestic violence calls. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Please, if you don't feel safe or need help, call the Domestic Violence Hotline at 1-800-799-SAFE. That's 1-800-799-7233. Before we take off, time for today's act of kindness. Ever since the coronavirus outbreak here in America kicked in, you've been sharing with us and the rest of the country some moments of kindness and generosity in your lives. Today's story is from Suzanne in Virginia.
My neighbor Kathy, who has been laid off by an airline for whom she's worked for 30 years, is a real saint in that she does the grocery shopping for our 85-year-old neighbor who can't get out and for another neighbor who's been disabled by cancer. Kathy's kindness has been repaid by our landlord, who has told her not to worry about the rent. He knows she's good for it eventually. Thank you.
Suzanne, thank you so much for sharing your story. What acts of kindness and empathy have you seen in recent days? Tell us your story at 855-236-1212. You can also leave us a message on our free app, 1A Vox Pop, or a voicemail at 855-236-1212. This conversation was produced by Amanda Williams and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, visit the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.